cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the Renegade Reports. This is not an error on your phone. My voice is giving up on me.
Are you trying to outshine me or what?
I am. I'm trying to go complete no larynx.
Donald Trump wins and then you get sick.
It was because I was so excited screaming at the television. This is what happened. This is what happened when Trump wins.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
It's a pity. I wanted to shout at Hillary when she gave a speech, but she was too angry, so she didn't come out to.
She was too busy throwing office stationery at all of her staff. And then she sent John Podesta out to mansplain the loss to everyone.
Right, and say, no, votes are still being counted, guys. Donald Trump has really won, but every vote counts.
Every vote counts. We are going to carry on. No, you're not. You're going to go for a walk in the woods and take a picture with someone.
Hillary, yes.
Yeah.
The next day, weird, eh?
And now the world is losing their mind. Well, first they lost their mind about Trump. I mean, I can't believe he did it. It's just...
Oh, no, I'm gobsmacked.
We got it completely wrong. I mean, I have to say we got it right originally.
Yes.
Like months back.
Right.
But
it's the first time I've been wrong since 1993.
What, on the president of the US?
No, on anything.
Oh.
First time I've been wrong since 1993. So
there you go, Ramon.
It's a bit of a shock. Now I know how it feels like to be a lefty.
So yeah, he's busy putting together his transition team.
Yeah, I know. The transition team is fine. His nominations for secretaries of the various things are awful. He's like going full George Bush, man. Neocon-ish.
Well, he's somewhere between George Bush and what Bernie Sanders would have done. It's going to be fantastic. We can hope that government completely doesn't work and then people actually get what they need, which is small government, less interference in their life.
One hopes so. I don't think he's a candidate for it, though. But
it's exciting times. I mean, it would have been horrific with Hillary, but I'm going to let you do the introduction of our guest because, well, listen to me.
Right. So, joining us this week is a middle ground, very neutral singer. No one's really heard of him that much.
Yeah, not controversial.
I think he sings in Afrikaans sometimes. And I think he goes, what's his name? Oh, Steve Hofmeyr. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome, Steve.
How's it going, Ramon?
Never heard of you before. Thank you for joining us.
I just keep it like that. I don't want to get famous on this show.
We like some people recommended you come on. We're like, who's Steve Hofmeyr?
We like to help struggling artists whenever we can.
Developing artists, and you'll get them through. Listen, if I don't sound like you, people say I am sick. If I don't arrive like that at the concert. Hey, but thank you very much. I've got to keep reminding myself that I'm in the company of libertarians and not liberals because I keep asking myself, why didn't you invite me more often? We share so many ideas. But
in my defense, I've sent you about 4 emails, sir.
Yeah. It was tough to get us together, but we're here now.
Indeed.
And I've been looking forward to it.
And we appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I also sound like that. If you scream for the box and Trump, you would sound like that. And...
Well, you can't scream
and Australia.
You can't scream for the box anymore.
Yeah.
Nothing to scream.
There's nothing.
No, you scream at them, though.
Yeah. But listen, I mean, I knew England was going to win, but I screamed for the box. I was dead sure Trump was going to lose, although I backed him. I went to bed at 2 o'clock. I mean, I'm not going to sit up for 4 hours and watch the Americans vote Hillary in, and I woke up to these wide-eyed CNN, BBC presenters trading water for 48 hours. They didn't have vocabulary. They couldn't speak. They couldn't describe what they were seeing. And I was as astounded.
I think everyone was, except maybe, was even Trump astounded? I saw a tweet the day after. He's like, I bet he wanted to last. Now, I'm sure he's livid that he actually has to do some work now.
I think he was quite taken by surprise. His sort of victory speech, which wasn't too bad, but you could see towards the end of it, he kind of didn't have anything more because I don't think they'd planned a victory speech. I think they'd planned.
That'll be good to know if what the true honesty of opinions was around there.
Well, very much like Hillary didn't plan a concession speech, which is super awkward.
Yeah.
And she had to give it.
Hey, but guys, come on, isn't that the end of the degree to which we will trust again? Mainstream media, mainstream opinion polls, mainstream political analyzers. I just started decluttering my Twitter. I'm just I'm just unfollowing all these guys, everything from the Huffington Post right through to the New York Times. I just don't care. I'll follow one or two of them because you've got to know thy enemy, you know. Yes. But as part from that, I'm cleaning up.
I'm worried about the fact that you actually followed the Huffington Post.
I did.
I think I've kind of got to this theory that the Huffington Post is probably part of the original problem. So I think Huffington Post started the sort of social justice warrior type of thing, and then BuzzFeed and everyone else carried on with it.
Yeah. Am I wrong, or in the last 48 hours, Huffington Post started advertising locally?
Yeah, they're in South Africa.
They're starting.
They've launched Huffington Post.
I saw something right now.
So Virashni,
maybe there's no more market out there for them.
Virashni from the Mail and Guardian is going across to the Huffington Post.
I deleted them as well. Mail and Guardian, finished with that.
Shame. They blocked me.
They blocked you?
I upped you already, sir.
Yeah, I wish I can say that, but I just had to block them myself. Yeah, so that's it. It's decluttering. I've also killed off all artists that I used to follow that forced me into a Hillary vote because we'll go to Canada. So goodbye to all of you guys.
So and Lady Samuel, Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga's gone. Oh, Miley Cyrus. I mean, how am I going to end my woes? And of course, Cher is out. Bruce Springsteen has been the hardest because I like him, but I don't have to follow him. You know, I'll go buy the CD if it comes out if I want to. But the other guys, goodbye. Thank you very much.
You've got political views. Is it always necessary for artists to have political views? Why do they always climb onto the bandwagon?
I actually have no idea. It's like saying to anybody else who walks the street, why should you not? You cannot have an opinion because you have a certain kind of job.
Yeah. No, so I suppose, but it's become that thing where you've got to like side and,
They're all kind
of, kind of Hollywood stars, and Hollywood is quite left.
Yeah.
So they all sort of always go Democrat.
Yeah. What are we going to do with Hollywood?
Well, I think Hollywood's killing itself.
Yeah, I hope so. We should give them more rope. And as an actor, I mean, I'm a drama school student. It's awful to know that what you've said now is probably the greatest truth, which nobody's discussed, is what is it with artists that if they don't have campaigns, they invent campaigns, that they are always to the left. I could only find one artist supporting Donald Trump, and that was Clint Eastwood.
Right.
Is there anybody under 90 years old who's actually supported, who's an artist out there, a vocal artist, who supported Donald Trump? I don't know. I didn't find any.
Well, I think a lot of artists that we don't know about, obviously.
That's why they get voted in. Yeah. Under the radar.
Well, I mean, that's how Donald won, because no one was honest enough to say, I'm really going to vote for this guy.
Why? Just tell me quick, why? Do you think it's because of this massive narrative manipulated and dominated by left-wing press?
Well, I do think that the reality is, we discussed it on the show. There were things Donald Trump said which he shouldn't have said or were abhorrent, but there were things that Hillary did that she shouldn't have done and were abhorrent.
One spoke and the other one actions.
Yeah, well, actions are worse than words, in my opinion. But we thought both of them were quite poor candidates.
Yeah.
But the difference was, if you were with her, you know, that was a trendy thing to do. You were very much part of the in crowd and you were accepted. You're part of the group.
Was it ever trendy to be on a conservative side or a Republican side? Was it ever trendy to be a Bush supporter? Was it ever trendy to be Reagan?
Well, it hasn't been
Reagan,
trendy
maybe.
Since Reagan.
Maybe Reagan. Reagan.
Reagan
maybe
was Reagan. The last one, yeah.
I don't actually think so, because if you listen to some of the guys who lived through that era, they say that Reagan was popular 15 years after Reagan.
Like Thatcher,
and,
maybe.
Yeah,
oh, is that so?
And at the time, you know, there was a lot of this sort of hysteria that we have around Trump about Reagan at the time and what he was going to do to people's civil rights and all kinds of things that never really materialized. I think I think a large part of the Trump thing is what everyone said, even some people who are honest enough on the left, which is it's a complete backlash to being called a racist just because you are X race or X gender or
just for expressing an opinion, right?
Yeah.
Or people look at it and go, you know, he was being called a misogynist, homophobic, xenophobic. You know, he's being called everything.
Yeah.
And
which everybody who is not left is called. If you're not liberal, you're called all those things. As a rule, it's kind of, and we're going to sort that out now. We're going to equalize and neutralize some of that stuff and just make them, you know, I like the idea that they are victim groups, and they're going to come stand in a long line here and say, I'm LGBT, I'm gay, or I'm gender aware, and we're all going to go, we care, but go stand in the queue. Go stand in the queue where everybody else is standing with problems.
I'm not sure anyone does care. I think that transgender thing, for example, nobody gives a shit. I think a lot of people looked at that North Carolina bathroom issue and were like, are you joking that this is an issue?
Yeah.
A lot of trans people said, this has never been an issue.
Yeah,
we just go wherever we want to anyway.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you've been called a racist. Let's go there.
I've been called everything. I must hold the record for being called gay and homophobic on the same day. So by then, you know, oh, all right.
Have you been called a racist before 6 a.m. on Twitter, though?
I have.
Damn it.
I have. Have you been called?
Ramona, I think you're going to get beaten here.
I've been called any hour of the day a racist.
So a few things about that. Firstly, what do you think about being called a racist? Does it mean anything to you anymore?
No, it's kind of water off a duck's rectum, as I always say. Because for the simple reason that I will not stop distinguishing between races. That is not the same as discriminating amongst races, and I take this and give the power, and you have the power to do people in because of pigmentation. I don't have that power, firstly. Go back to the first point. I distinguish between races. Unfortunately, fortunately, I'm not a biological determinist, so I don't believe that there are races that can and races that can't. I don't really see it like that. I do believe there are races that didn't.
Okay.
That is the difference between me. So people would like to stereotype me as one of those old right wings. They want, you know, there's no favorite to shoot. There's no Eugene de Blanche to strangle. We've got to find somebody else, you know. And, there's Steve Hofmeyr. He's white Afrikaner and he's Afrikaans. And he says nice things about a regime that we hated. So why don't we pick on him? But you're not going to find me even remotely like the old.
All right, so let me ask you about some of your views then. Because, for example, so you're saying you don't believe in sort of this biological determinism. So you wouldn't say that black people are stupid because they're black, right?
Yeah, it doesn't lie in the pigmentation, we know that. But I do believe that certain cultural habits fall in along racial lines. When the West comes to a continent like Africa and there's black and white, it's very easy just to generalize and say, they do things this way, they are black, they do things this way, and they are white. We do have a very unique situation down here in the southern arse point of Africa, which is really like nowhere else in the world. If there are biological differences, and they do make a hell of a difference to other people, they certainly don't to me. Maybe on the athletics court, maybe, I don't know. Maybe white people can't jump, maybe black people can rap, you know, I don't know. But it's not, they're not like pressing.
Well, the world's best rapper is Eminem, and or the most successful.
And he's white, or whitish.
And
the world's best golfer was black.
Yeah.
And then there's Lewis Hamilton. It's getting difficult to say, you know, black can only do that and white can only
do that. Yeah, look, I don't buy that argument at all. In fact, I find that argument to be quite racist, in fact. I think certainly there probably is a genetic component in some areas. I mean, sprinters as an example, there's no doubt that
long distance
white guys just don't have it. We just don't have it. So
would you say that there's more than just distinguishing between races?
What do you mean by that? What do you mean when you say you distinguish between races?
Because I see different races.
So someone's black, someone's
white.
So
I'm very much like the government. I'm very much like the ANC. You can't have BEE and not distinguish between races.
So you're not colorblind?
I'm definitely not colorblind.
Okay.
And I quite like it. I like the differences.
All right. So then if you distinguish between races, so are you just talking about the actual physical color of someone, or are you talking about the cultural attributes of someone?
Yeah, both. I would go both. You know that during the Anglo-Boer War, the English called the Afrikaners a different race, and the Afrikaners called the British that other race.
Yeah, sure.
They hated each other as races, and they were both the same skin color. So I don't know why we think races are only or exclusively black and white. For me, a race is more than skin color, pallor, pigmentation. It's wider than that.
So do you think
it's also a collective habit? It's a momentum, it's a heritage, it's a different kind of history.
Yes.
It's maybe a different language as well, although we know that's neither here nor there. Yeah, there are lots of differences between races.
Okay. So when you look at that difference, do you attribute certain moral qualities to those different attributions to the race?
I do, but I don't attribute them to pigmentation, to biology that much. It's more psychology, because that's the collective habit that comes from that spot there, and you all generally came from, that's the kind of thing that you like, and you guys come from there. That these collective habits fall in along racial lines is nobody's fault, but somebody's going to use a generalization and call you black and call you white, and that's what happened in South Africa. It doesn't upset me much.
Right, okay.
It's a bit wide. It's a bit general, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I can't pinpoint it more than that, but it's exactly what I do.
Worries.
So now you know why I'm not really offended for calling a racist, because I'm not. I don't feel like it. I go out there, I meet more South Africans than most South Africans that I know.
That's true.
My whole life has been 3-4 concerts per week for 30 years. Do you know how much of the country you see? Everywhere I get out of my bus, I am swamped by black people and white people and brown people of all groups, and they want a selfie and they want to chat. Racists, people who call me racist, make it extremely easy for me. They did the same to Trump. They make it very easy for us. We have to do very little to be liked because we are demonized by the media.
Yeah.
But when we walk out there and meet people face to face, we're actually quite congenial and quite easy to get along.
So if you must hate black people, and then the first black guy you walk up to, you go, "Hey, I'm Steve," and have a polite conversation with him, he goes, he doesn't just think you're a nice guy, he thinks you're a god, basically.
You only have to smile. I swear to God, it's exactly like it is. Trump, for the next few weeks, has to do very little. In fact, he must do nothing. He must just smile and embrace a few people. And
well, I should argue for the next 4 years, he should do nothing. But
we'll get to that.
Okay, you know, because you mentioned our libertarian leanings, but we're also got quite classically liberal leanings as well.
So do I.
And in terms of that and the concept of the individual versus the group. So one of my biggest issues in South Africa is that that's what we tend to lean on. We automatically go, okay, well, he's a white male, so of course he said that. Or, you know, it's a black man, so X. Instead of understanding that people are individuals, and you see this occasionally with people who are who do break the mold very openly of their group, and then they get called names, whatever that happens.
Also by their own group.
Yes, no, sure.
Yeah, because you're breaking stereotype and you're going against the grain. But listen, I'm pro-generalization, because I live in a country, I am. That means you've got to have a thick skin, you're going to be blamed for things that you are completely innocent of, but that is what we do. Let me tell you why I'm pro-generalization, because in this country, it could save your life. We had a fight about black-white, somewhere along the line about 3 years ago, and we made a deal with some of the liberals that I tell you what, every time that a black person knocks on your door, you must open your door, then I will open my door every time a white person knocks on my door, and let's see who gets raped before Christmas. That was the kind, it was a party, you know, we probably weren't very sober, but that was the kind of deal. Now you know that the one group will be seen as racist, or the other group, but one of them will probably be subject to the kind of rape figure that we have. 702 at some stage had a phone in where even black people started phoning in, saying that when we stop at intersections in Johannesburg and people approach us that are black, we close the windows, we slam them shut if we can, because that is a generalization. But we live in a kind of country where that's probably better. It's probably better that you do that. We live in a kind of country where generalization could save your life. We are not a place where humanitarian speeches work very well. We wipe each other out. We're in the top 10 most violent countries in the world. The cautionary step is the one we should be taking all the time. So I do generalization, which means I must take the punch as well. I must take the sins of my fathers and bear them with a fat smile. People see me as a racist in the mold of Verwoerd. I can't say, but I don't generalize. I'm not like that. I have to change it from the inside and prove people wrong.
So you're happy to take it on the chin?
I'm going to take
basically,
it on the chin. Yeah.
For your views.
But to come back to the first point is, am I more an individual than a group person? And I just don't know how the an individual like me can distinguish himself, can define himself outside the group.
All right. Well, because you've taken on the group, I suppose. What you view as the group.
Yeah, we have individuation. Isn't that a Jungian phase where the things that you do that other people don't do that makes you different? But it's almost like meeting atheists who used to be Christians. You will never be a complete atheist. You will be an atheist from a Christian background. And you'll be an atheist because you were at a secular background, and you may be an atheist because you revolted against Muslim, the Muslim society. So I believe in context. I'm going to use that word a lot. And I am an Afrikaner, I'm a huge individual, and I pride myself in being an individual, but my entire momentum and the way I think, and even today as open thinking, especially about religion, I still call myself a Christian, and I'm very skeptical, and I fight with my synod all the time, but I will always be an Afrikaner, which is predominantly a Christian from that point of view. Are there atheists around me that are Afrikaners? I'm sure they are, and I'm very welcome. One day a Zulu's going to stand up and say, I prefer to be an Afrikaner. I accept their history 100%. I want to make sure that their future is my number one priority. And I will say, welcome to the table, have a cook, sister, grab a pannekoek, and do the soki. It's probably going to go like that, not soon, but it could turn out like that. And you have to be ready to do it.
But it sounds to me like you are more of a, what I would term, not a cultural supremacist. No, supremacist is the wrong word, but you're very proud of who you are, what, in air quotes, your people have done.
Yeah.
In terms of what being the so-called white tribe of Africa, the Western
tribe of Europe. I am the white tribe of Africa, and I am an African. I can trace my roots further back than Julius Malema can. I can actually trace my roots back in South Africa further than most black people can, because they only learned to read and write 100 years ago. My ancestors landed here around about 1791, 1702, I can't remember one of those 17s. So that's a couple of generations, you know. So I'm truly African. But my way of life and thinking and the things that I bought of here and the things that I am an agent of is the West.
All right. But now, just that off the quip you just made, about the thing that they only learned to read and write 100 years ago. They have their own language structures, right? They have their own cultural structures. The fact that it's not ours, do you think that's a problem, or do you think it's just different?
No, it's not. But when you place two cultures next to each other, you've got to stand back and see which one assimilates to which one.
Yes.
You don't have to say supremacy. You don't have to use the word ever. You just have to stand back and observe and see who jumps for who. Hey, let me give you a better example.
Sure.
The English South African didn't assimilate to the Afrikaans way of life. In fact, we did to theirs. Why?
Right.
Because I really believe theirs were superior at the time. They're also stronger. In fact, if we didn't have a union of South Africa, the Afrikaans community wouldn't have risen again, wouldn't have stood up again, because we relied heavily, education especially, mining economy. After the Anglo-Boer War, the second best thing to winning was the fact that we lost to the English, who came back. To a degree, we still don't like them much, but to a degree, we could rely and rely on their support,
right,
to become a powerful Western nation in Africa.
So do you think Western culture is supreme to all, not maybe not all others, but all others in South Africa?
It may have had its run, I don't know, but it's thought things through. When I say Western, I don't even think of English. I think of very old German and French philosophies. I go back to Descartes. I can go even further back. If you consider that the part of the Western civilization is not an exclusive knowledge we invented, it is also being open to all the others, and the Babylonians and the Egyptians, taking all the information, because they traveled first and they traveled that far first. They were the internet. Where the West was the internet first. Ships were the internet first. So it's an accumulation of a lot of knowledge. And as all systems go and all civilizations go, yeah, I still think it is the... Should we call it superior? If you want to use the word. I just think it's the better one. And if you left it there for no, and nobody said a word, the others will assimilate to it.
Right.
That is the point.
And I think that's true. I mean, I'm also a Western supremacist, if you want to call it that. Yeah. I think it's the best form of political, religious, and personal rights that we have in the world. And everyone tries to emulate it.
And if you want to shoot it down, you've got to tell me what the alternative is, and you've got to show me that it's superior and that it's better. So if you're going to burn down universities and decolonize education, I'll be fine with it. I'll probably throw a rock or two with you if you have shown me the substitute. What are we going to replace it with? What is the history that you have that can show the world that will just stun them?
But don't you know they're going to replace it with just another Western culture called Marxism?
Yeah, that'll be painful. You're probably so right.
All right,
it's going to happen.
If you assimilate the cultures, sure, you do assimilate into one culture. So, you know, you've mentioned that kind of the English were the ultimate victors, probably because they were just violent bastards.
But it was war.
Yeah, it was war.
But it was war in a time of war. And if you were not good at war in a time of war, if you couldn't conquer in a time of conquest, you weren't good for that period.
Yeah, but they were just brutal on another level, really.
Compared to who? Chaka Zulu?
Not as much as others. The Belgians and the French were far worse. Not that it excuses.
Okay, listen. It was a barbaric period.
So sure. But even if you assimilate, you still keep some of your culture, right? So
yeah,
the general society of how you behave day to day, that's the sort of dominant culture. But what you might do at home is still part of your culture. So does that not? And doesn't that then apply to everyone? And is that an issue? I mean, because I'm seeing, for example, in the Afrikaans community, you guys, as you would say, have assimilated into English culture, but you've kept a lot of Afrikaans tradition.
Yeah.
So the Zulu people, for example, have done a similar thing, but have kept a lot of their tradition. Where's the issue there?
The issue is how much have you kept? So my language group will be the last language group in this country who fights for mother tongue language. You won't find a Zulu people doing it. You won't find Khoisa people doing it. Tswana, Venda people doing that. They want an English university. Already there is a massive surrender of these cultural gems that you're talking about.
Maybe they're just globalizing. I think it's a good strategy to want to be taught in English.
Said you.
Yeah, says me. Yeah, the French Arab.
On the day, a week after globalization got its biggest hiding.
You don't think something like Fees Must Fall is that exact thing? There are people as part of that movement who are going, we want to be taught in our mother tongues.
Not at all. That's not what Fees Must Fall is about at all. It's all about English. In fact, that was the irony of it, of removing the statue of Rhodes and then burning down a university to get rid of Afrikaans to make it an English university. There was not one placard that said we want education in Zulu or Khoisa. In fact, at some stage at the KwaZulu-Natal University, Afrikaans was being asked for as a second language to English, not Zulu, for the simple reason that manuals didn't exist and the academic tradition didn't exist for all the different school thoughts out there.
All right, so you're a big advocate, obviously, of the Afrikaans community, of Afrikaans as a language.
Yeah.
Let's talk quickly about that. Afrikaans as a language, it is actually quite a well-spoken language in the country. Mm. There's a lot of people who speak it who wouldn't be considered culturally Afrikaans.
Yeah.
But certainly they're Afrikaans speakers. And then there's obviously the Afrikaans community.
Yeah. The brown community has now outnumbered the white community. When it comes to speaking Afrikaans as mother tongue, yeah.
But if we're going to talk about the Afrikaans community and preserving Afrikaans as a language, what's the big deal with going to English? So Ramon just made that point. Where's the issue?
No, I can't explain that to you because you don't have a second language, do you? Do you have a French, Arabic? Ah, you see, fantastic, very much. You see, I won't be able to explain that to people who don't have two languages or whose first language is now showing the back door. So, yes, okay, I'm going to give you...
Yeah, with respect, it sounds a bit like a cop-out.
Yes, how?
It's fine to... Because you can't explain it to someone who doesn't have X attributes.
Oh, no, I will. Okay, I will explain it to you then. If you, I don't want to cop out here.
No, I do.
But
I
it's going to be very difficult because I get the frown all the time from people who speak other languages. I get it a lot like from Americans. They think, why would you do that? But they only speak one language.
Yeah, of course.
We have the same problem in Belgium, maybe. I suppose some of them have French there. If you had to suggest to them that French is going to be the majority language and your language is second, there will be no debate. We won't have questions like these. So, no, it's not a cop out at all. One of the great byproducts of Afrikaans education was that you were bilingual. You could not pass your year as an Afrikaans student if you did not pass English. And that's what made Afrikaans so big and so embracing of everybody. And it is still a gorgeous, gorgeous language. I don't believe there are better languages. But I believe it's very difficult to explain to other people why you would want to have an Afrikaans university. Representativity-wise, they only owe us 8 universities. We don't deserve the 21 we had, I suppose, not in the new South Africa. But we just surrendered our last one. We gave Stellenbosch away on a big tray with a letter saying, please take our last Afrikaans university. It was built by our money.
But why would you want the state to give you something?
Because it's constitutional, because they just fight for all their languages. And it's not my fault that other language groups don't want universities in the language, but this language group does want a university or a tertiary education.
But you can do that without the state, though.
We are doing it without the state, and it's extremely expensive. You're going to pay taxes. You're going to pay taxes. Your taxes will be used for all the other languages, universities. And apart from that, above that, you have to go build your own university. That becomes very expensive.
Yeah, but we know what type of government we live under. I mean, it's not.
That's even worse. It's not. That means the money will definitely not come our way.
Yes. I mean, it's not a surprise. I think everyone gets fucked equally.
You cannot know what it feels like when your language is thrown in the back of the queue and the language. The Taalraad, the guys in charge of your language, correspond to each other in English. You can't understand what that feels like. That means the wrong people are in charge of my monuments, the wrong people are in charge of my culture, and my way of thinking and our collective habits and our literature and our university. It's awful. That's why I'm so angry.
Sorry, Jonathan, I'm just on a roll here, so to speak. But it still appears, though, as though you're asking the state to protect your culture. Which I do understand.
Yes, and all other cultures. They don't have to single me out.
True. But you made the argument that the state is not protecting our culture and we're speaking to each other in English, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Why, though? Why would you want the state to protect your culture? The culture exists without the state in any event.
Once again, I have to explain to English people this. How am I going to start? Where am I going to begin?
Please.
Have you ever lived in a place where English is marginalized and thrown out of the mix? Never. You'll be stuffed. You'll have to move immediately because you can't communicate. So I don't understand the why, because it's the way I speak. It's the way I dream. It's the way I pray. It's the way I think. It's my best way. In fact, I'm suffering in English as my second language because Afrikaans is the way I form ideas and concepts. And that is being taken away. You know, as soon as it's closed off from tertiary education, the very next step is high school. After high school, it will be primary school. And then you'll get your nursery schools, your old age homes and your churches. What the hell is left? That is just a long explanation for a very short word called genocide.
Okay, hold on. Before we get to genocide, wait. Before we get there, I'm just because what you're saying, I'm going, okay, what if there was a black dude, if you were a black dude sitting in front of me going, saying exact same things about Zulu or Sotho or Tswana or any of the black languages, Pedi, whatever it is, and you know, some of these arguments are brought up in terms of the black culture being eroded, and a lot of the, I know you don't agree that the sort of Fees Must Fall is about this, but it is partially about what they feel, that group feels, is Western culture overriding what they feel is their culture.
Yeah.
And not paying attention to, that's the whole decolonization project. It's like, we don't really care if what you teach us.
Please don't tell
is,
me you give it credence. They're the ones who said science must fall.
No,
I don't
give it credence, but I'm trying to see if there aren't parallels here.
No, there must be. If there are guys who sat on this chair and said the same thing, we're for that march, we're on the same march. We understand it. We are a minority language. I don't understand how Zulu can be the biggest language in this country and there's not one person marching for Zulu mother tongue education at universities. I don't get it.
Because maybe they don't want the state to protect it. Maybe they've satisfied that
no, I don't want
keep
maybe.
It alive.
I want to know from their mouth what is the reason. If that is the maybe, it's a terrible maybe. So you deserve, if you are paying tax, you deserve the state to take care of your culture.
So in 1976, you would have bought into the riots against Bantu education because that was in part people going, this is not our education. This is another education.
I did not buy into it because they didn't pay for it.
Okay.
Well, they weren't able to.
They weren't citizens. They were subjects. It was, as terrible as it may sound now, a minority sovereignty, a sovereign state with rules. And everything you do in a state like that, which was used afterwards as being cruel and unkind, is the stuff that you do today when everybody throws their weight around in your state and they don't pay tax and they're not really citizens. It's a harsh way of saying it, but this debate will come back over and over for the rest of our lives as long as you look back at apartheid as being one thing only, and that's suppression of other people. But it was a minority sovereign state. Fight a minority, understand that. A small minority. You can't say it's insignificant because they lost 30,000 women and children in a war. You can't say those graves are insignificant and you don't deserve your sovereignty. And they fought and stood by and went into a partnership with the English until they got independence, which is the Republic of South Africa in 1948. You can poo-poo all that as much as you want. It's not going to change a thing to how hard you will defend self-determination. That is the first thing we lost.
But there you go, self-determination, i.e., with respect to you, I'm just pulling on this point. You want things from the state to protect your culture. Cultures exist without the state. The state is there to ordinarily do a few things. Protecting culture is not one of them in the slightest.
Oh, it is actually.
So self-determination exists outside of the state's sphere of influence, and it should, in my opinion.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, you say there's an entire ministry, it's going to disappear, an entire department, because they should be taking off. Everything about this country is about cultures and differing cultures, and they are represented by languages as well. They're all different cultures.
Sure.
So I don't quite know if that's it, because if I'm forced to pay tax, the government should be forced to take care of all the cultures. Maybe, I don't know, maybe according to what taxes we pay, because then we'll take care of our own, you know, then we'll get something back for our own universities, but that's not going to happen, is it? No, the government, it's the government's duty to take care of them. They don't have to favor anybody, but now they're favoring only the English, which is the fourth most spoken language in the country. I can't get the math.
Right. Yes, but they're favoring English for a specific reason, because it's the global language of trade, other than Mandarin, which is coming soon, by the way, as far as I heard.
God help us all.
Which is, what's wrong with that? I think it's great. I don't think, In an ideal situation, in an ideal society, is the one I envision, people will be free to attend whatever the fucking school they want, to be taught in whatever language they want, and the training and the textbooks will be done in whatever language they want as well.
In an ideal society.
Yes, but we live in a state where nothing is ideal because, A, it's a democracy with 13 tribes living under one political framework, and that is not normal. That's not a normal state of affairs for people to live within these borders. They have various different cultures. It's not normal to live under one political framework for so many different cultures. But I think we're doing all right. There's a fuckload of problems, and I know, but we're doing all right.
Self-determination and international law, I don't have to defend it here. Every group should be allowed to govern themselves. Every group has the right to not be governed by other people, other cultures, and other languages. And I'm sorry that my culture is the only culture who screams for the enactment of that, to give us a degree of independence at least. What? Not completely Volkstaat yet, but could we just have 7 universities in Afrikaans?
But from the state, though, the state can't do anything
right. Free markets.
The state can't do anything right. See, they can't even keep the fucking lights on.
No, I know that. I'm just wondering why
you have that expectation then.
What is wrong? No, I can't let it go because that's what's called the standard. Even if you let go of it, I mean, the standard is that I expect that and I expect it for other people as well. And my culture is in a dire straits for this. We really need it. We need our self-determination. We will fight for it. We're sending people to the UN all the time to come back defend.
What's the end result? If things continue this way, you lose the battle. Just so I understand, because I've got no immersement in this in your fight. No. So what is the end result in 20, 40, 50
years? The end result is that you lose a language, and a language is a way of knowing the world. It is devastating to lose even just one remote little Indian language in the Andes. I can't accept that. Firstly, it is my language. It'll make me very angry if we did. But I also see what happens when I tour abroad, because I meet Afrikaners everywhere. You know, about a million of us have immigrated. So I'm very grateful to the ANC for being so, you know, goddamn pathetic, because now I can tour the world and see Afrikaners almost every continent. And when I get there, I realize how tough it is to keep on speaking this language. In fact, some people are fighting very hard to keep Afrikaans alive in their language, but it really, as a rule, disappears within a generation or two.
But that's evolution, though.
Yeah, it is evolutionary.
That's evolution of society.
I'm just saying that gives you an idea of why should it be happening in the country where Afrikaans is a bigger language than English.
I mean, Steve, don't get me wrong. I'm not fighting with you. I mean, I do think if you're a proud Afrikaner and you want to speak Afrikaans and you want your institutions to be Afrikaans, I fully understand that and I get it. I just think asking the government to enforce that is naive, if I'm really honest.
If you lose your higher functions, which are partly subsidized, which should count for all languages. If you lose your higher function, you will become a kitchen language again, which is spoken on the street corners and nowhere else. And that is unfortunately the future and the fate of my language at the moment as things are standing.
I don't know. Afrikaans culture is doing rather well. You've got, you yourself, you sell out shows every week.
We're both accounting for the present. I'm trying to account for the future. I know Afrikaans are doing well. It's brilliant. I'm very glad.
Without the state.
In spite of the state.
Exactly. But that's how cultures are supposed to fucking thrive.
No, I think the Afrikaans, I believe the Afrikaans culture and language is dying out. I'm an Afrikaans artist, a singer, and our shows are like full, and we've got 80,000 Afrikaansers. But isn't it amazing that it's the only way we can count our Afrikaners? We can't count them at universities. We can't count them in matric. We can't count them finishing qualifications. We can't count them for those great Afrikaans medical faculties we had. We can't count them for the manuals we used to study in those. We can't count them in the law department and at, educational department. It's all gone. It's all gone. You've got to see that as well. It's very painful. For me, it is very, very painful, the language debate.
And you interpret that as genocide. I just want to want to get onto this genocide
cultural,
point. Because,
let's call it cultural genocide because nobody's bleeding yet.
Yeah, because you were deplatformed from, the Cape Town Press Club?
Yeah.
And then you wrote, you gave your speech, you released your speech.
Published it anyway, yeah.
Yeah, there were some very interesting points in there on that speech, but I think, I'm not sure I fully agreed or understood where you were coming from on the genocide point.
Well,
please understand that I have just as much of a problem when, for example, black people will argue that they lived through a Holocaust and a genocide because apartheid was horrific in many ways. Genocide, it was not. So I think genocide is a very strong word. I think it's only happened a few times in history.
I think you're the only one in this room
Yeah, well, we can probably find it all Wandon, who also could argue. So just explain to me your view on the genocide thing. Obviously, the farm murder side comes into it as well. And there's a lot of debate on that. You know, I want to discuss that.
I'm trying to find the quote for the definition of the genocide that I'm following. That's the guy who coined the term genocide from the beginning. And if you think if you thought a genocide is about the amount of people that die, you can have genocide without any blood flowing at all. I'm not going to find it now. It's out here somewhere. So a genocide will be an oppression of any group. Of which the end purpose will be to wipe it out completely. You only have to listen to the things that are said and the memes flying around in this country to know that we are the target at that stage of it. White people as well, don't forget, they also have it. So if your idea of genocide is only what happened in the Second World War or with the Hutus and the Tutsis, you've only got half the definition. You've got to get the rest of the definition. If you give me a second, I'll look it up for you just now, so that you can know that it's also culture. It's also the way a culture is wiped out.
But I think that's called ethnic cleansing.
But
genocide, I think, specifically relates to the death of people.
No,
ethnic
doesn't.
Cleansing refers to the culture, language.
Genocide has got five tenets, and only one of them is the physical annihilation. Let's get to the physical annihilation.
Sure.
The countries of my forefathers, and I suppose your forefathers, if they are from Holland or Germany or England or Canada or France, are 2 out of 100,000 murders per year. That is, if you throw us into a kraal together and say, kill each other, because we certainly will kill each other and we will rape, because all cultures do it. We'll do it at that rate. The world average is 6 out of 100,000. South Africa is 33 or 30. Let's make it 30. I'm going to err on the conservative side because people say I overreact. 30 out of 100,000.
Right.
The Afrikaans farming community is now in 2016, in this month, I'm going to go for 150 out of 100,000. I'll tell you exactly how I get there. Because in these last few months, it's been 180, and the average for last year was 130. So I'm going to take something in the middle. 150 out of 100,000. That is 60 more than the most violent country in the world, which is Uruguay, Paraguay, Colombia, the drug nations. Cape Town, for instance, is 60 out of 100,000. That makes it the most murderous city on this continent and the 10th most murderous city in the world. So I'm just giving you an idea. There's only a certain group, it's not the Afrikaner, there's a certain group, predominantly, they are Afrikaners, by the way, these farmers. I would say probably about 90% of them are. I'm making a wild guess here, it could be more. Of that 90% are dying at 158 out of 100,000. If you are only counting liters of blood, that will qualify for genocide. Let's not even start with the language marginalization, the cultural marginalization, the education, the fact that you can't promise. You know what it's like to be a white father in this country? You cannot speak to your children, get them around a table and say, so what do you want to become one day? Like my father used to. What do you want to do with your life? You don't have that. In fact, if you're not getting out of here soon, there's probably nothing to do because you're not being able to study in your language.
Okay, but if we look at the definition of genocide, which I looked at a few weeks ago, I believe there needs to be an intention behind it. Someone or some organization or something.
Like someone's going to take your blood and write against the wall, white bitch?
No. Someone has to someone has to plan it, so to speak. So there's a plan, right? Afrikaners.
But a plan can also be an omission. It can also be just closing your eyes when it's happening.
Okay.
When you beg the government to do something. When they take away, for your begging, all you get is they take away the commandos.
So,
and it increases.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's bland enough for me.
I would say that there's clearly from what you're saying, in terms of those statistics, there's a farm murder problem.
Yeah.
I don't jump to the genocide. And the only reason I don't do that, and I, respectfully, I think it hurts your argument, because the thing is absolutely there seems to be a problem of murdering farmers.
Yeah.
Is there a coordinated plan, which is my understanding as well of genocide, a coordinated plan to go after specific people who happen to be farmers with that intention?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think there is a lack of policing, certainly, probably, in those areas, and non-interest from government, probably, to help.
How is that not enough for you? Is there a clandestine department organized to genocidally wipe out Afrikaners? No. Is there a president who stands up and says it's Jan van Riebeek's fault and all the people who are from Jan van Riebeek's, it's his fault. He's the reason why we are. It's white people. It's when you have 114 extra race laws. Mm. 114 extra. That means 114 more race laws than during apartheid in the new South Africa. You have BEE, you have preferential procurement, you have affirmative action, you have quotas, you have representativity. All based on skin, which is just another way of saying we're going to make policy that your kids cannot stay in this country. We're going to make policy. How is that not part of it? We will make one group look so bad that when a murderer walks in there, he'll say, I can, of course, steal your cell phone and your television, but guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to tie you up and I'm going to have a little bit of fun. I even have a nice song to sing while I'm doing this. It's a song by Julius Malemetsi's Kill the Buddha, our rapist. Then I'm going to take an iron, I'm going to burn some people, I'm going to tie the fathers down. They do it for 6 hours. I've sat in court holding the hands of these 17-year-old girls who were raped like that. Mm-hmm. It is just the only way to describe it is not the amount, the quantity of murder. It is the quality of the murder. It is a kind of brutality you only get during genocide. So let me just quickly, in conclusion, ask you, just imagine if you give me leeway with my definition, which you don't like.
Yeah.
And everybody comes and they overreact. And they make us strong and they send in the police there and they make us a secure nation. That is what I will get for the overreaction. Let's say you are right and I am wrong and we shouldn't overreact. I think we should underreact a little. You will get what you're getting at the moment. You'll get the status quo and the farm murders will increase every year like it's doing at the moment. So give me then, if you're not going to allow my genocide, give me the benefit of the fact that it will get worse if we don't overreact.
But I do think you leave yourself up for attacks if you use the wrong term to define it.
Yeah, no, according to you. Genocide does not necessarily mean the immediate destruction of a nation, except when accomplished by mass killings of all members of a nation. It's intended rather to signify a coordinated plan of different actions aiming at the destruction of essential foundations of the life of national groups, with the aim of annihilating the group themselves. The objective of such a plan would be the disintegration of the political and social institutions of culture, language, national feelings, religion, and the economic existence of national groups, and the destruction of the personal security, liberty, health, dignity, and even the lives of the individuals belonging to such groups.
So why is
that? That is the gentleman. His name is Lemkin.
So do you think this is genocide against black people? Because they're the biggest victims of crime. Perpetrators as well, I'm sure, due to numbers. But, you know.
I would dare say, I don't know about all the other tenants, I haven't looked at it like that, but I would dare say with our kind of mortality, murder rate.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the whole country.
Oh, really?
I think we are being wiped out. What people don't like me for is that I blame black perpetrators predominantly for it. And then they get Oscar Pistorius and say, look, yeah, but there's a white guy who committed a murder. How can you say that? But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying en masse.
I mean, I think pro rata, I do think most perpetrators will be black. I mean, just based on the population numbers.
80-85% of the country.
No, do you think we ever mention any of these things without going pro rata? Of course we do that. Why do I use it out of 100,000?
No, I'm not saying you're wrong.
What we don't
I'm
get.
Saying the people attacking you for saying that.
Yeah.
It seems a bit weird.
Well, everything is pro rata. I'm not stupid. I know we're a small minority, but minorities go first in a country with 30 out of 100,000 murders.
Okay, but here's another thing, though. So there's no real plan from the state. Okay, for you there is.
There's no department sitting down with pens and papers writing out a plan, but they don't have to.
You think it's an act of omission? You think it's an act of omission that creates the plan?
Except for the actions that are taken, except for the things that are said, the things that are hanging around there, that the president, that I've just quoted the president, I've just quoted Julius Malema, you can quote over and over once a month for the thing that he's saying, that makes it okay out there to not just take the TV, but to rape them for 6 hours.
And I mean, in your look, we don't know. We really don't know. But your experience, you think that the individual perpetrators are using that as an excuse?
Yeah,
that they are hearing that and almost acting on it.
Absolutely. If your leaders monthly say it is okay to kill white people, it is okay that they are the scapegoats for just about anything that has gone wrong. Even 22 years later. It is the green door for you. Why would you not? Please don't tell me that they're doing it for socioeconomic reasons and they're doing it because they're poor. That'll really upset me.
Not because they're poor, but arguably, a argument I've heard is that, well, arguably the farmer would be the richest person within that geographical area. So it's an easy target.
So it is poverty.
No, not because
they're poor. Would you say it's greed?
Yeah, no, people are greedy.
Right? I'd say it's envy.
No, I don't think it's
Envy. It is Envy. You probably just said it's the richest guy in the area, so why not go for him?
Well, look, we also have a sort of problem in South Africa in that, because I don't buy the socioeconomic argument around crime either. Yeah. Ethiopia is a very poor country and
they don't do that. Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Low crime levels.
Yeah, but they're equally poor though.
They'll find somebody.
Well, you can find
somebody.
You can find equivalent countries where crime is.
Lots of poor people are not murderers.
My culture is an example of that. When we were completely wiped out during the Anglo-Boer War, we didn't go out.
I'm not justifying. I'm just trying to say there was 50 years, and I don't buy the 400 years argument either, but there was at least 40 years or whatever it was of persecution of black people. Right.
The figures don't say that. The figures don't.
What do you mean? I mean, there was apartheid for 40 years, right?
Yeah, there was apartheid. Yeah.
Okay. So there was a system that wasn't nice to black people.
Yes, I agree on that.
Okay. And so some black people kind of have moved on from it. And do you buy that some South Africans are kind of like over themselves? And for the most part, we go to the shops and shop at Woolies together and we get on. And
when it goes well.
Or do
well.
We deep yeah. down inside well. Still hate each other? Yeah. I mean, what's your view?
I agree.
You think we deep down
hate
each other?
We're more racially than ever, really. Racist than ever. We just don't like each other.
Okay, because the data doesn't say that. I mean, you know, like as the South African Institute of Race Relations. And look, it's polling data. So once again, polling data.
yeah. Will we ever believe polling data?
I mean, guys,
we love polls.
Guys, to quote our favorite philosopher, it's 2016.
that's my favorite philosopher, excuse you.
We've adopted him.
No, listen, are you asking me, is racism a problem? Of course it's a problem, and it's an increasing problem.
So
is it the biggest problem in the country? Not by a long shot at all. Okay, not according to Afrobarometer, and not according to the Institute of Security Studies.
Okay, all right. So you don't think it charts as a big problem, but you do think that individuals have a large issue. But I'm just trying to understand if there were 40 years of apartheid, it wasn't the nicest time to be a black person. And some of those black people are now kind of being told, well, yes, by leaders, you are owed, your land was stolen from you, things like this. Yeah. So in some way, you're entitled to X, Y, or Z, and these guys are still have nothing or very little, whatever. So they feel that they're entitled to that. And they happen to be also criminals in syndicates, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what they do as a job, because criminals are actually, that's their job. Then once they're in the action of that crime, that anger of that sort of 40 years of persecution, be it them themselves, because I don't think it is them themselves, because they've got 30-year-olds committing these crimes, but certainly they grew up with parents who had tough lives.
That's prevailing distaste.
I'm not trying to justify what these people do. I'm not trying to justify rape or murder. Yeah. I'm just trying to say, is there some sort of explanation there that you would buy into?
Except, no. I don't accept that explanation. You have to fall for many years of black consciousness propaganda, believe any of that. You have to just go check those mortality rates again. I think we lost more black on South African lives in the first 4 years of the new South Africa than during the 4 decades of the very cruel regime you just mentioned. There's also one thing that we never do in South Africa is during this period of white rule, you can go from the beginning of the 20th century, the black in South Africa has always compared his income to what he saw around him, what those damn colonials and what those whites were owning. They were never looking outside the borders of this country, comparing their income and life expectancy to the neighboring countries, to the other South Sahara countries and to the other African countries. That we don't have any, I don't think we have any statistics for that, any math that proves anything different. So you're gonna have to, I would have to reassess the whole thing, but also from our point of view. Don't forget that we were a minority state. We were a legit minority state. We have the graves and the contracts also with black leaders to prove it was a minority state. You can't throw away your weight in our state. Then came Pavoot and said, listen, we'll even give you your traditional land back. Go stand there and do your own thing. We could be JVs. We could still work. Nobody accepted that because, strangely, everybody who didn't accept it is doing it right now. Closing borders. Going pro-national. Doing conclaving and withdrawing into their groups and raising walls. Isn't that a strange thing? The very same countries that subsidized the entire anti-apartheid movement is now dividing the world.
Thoughts?
So, without being too trite on my side, do you suggest apartheid was a sort of factor, not civilization, but do you think it was actually quite good? for the people within it? Because I think it was bad for everyone in it.
No, I think aspects of apartheid was unforgivable. Okay. And I think lots of it was brilliant. Okay. I think under circumstances I would say that any human rights transgression under any circumstances for me would be a no-go area.
So like although the death of Steve Biko just
that is a human rights that was a human rights
and,
transgression.
And what about freedom of movement?
Or the forced eviction.
In somebody else's country.
No.
That is not a human rights transgression.
No, but...
You need a passport to walk around Paris.
Sure, but black people being able to move in their own country.
In their own country, but they could move in their own country all they want. They just didn't want their own country. It was too much fun on this side of the border, it seems to me.
Yeah,
But let me just look at some of the transgressions of apartheid. Steve Biko, for me, was a human rights transgression in anybody's country and in anybody's language.
Sure.
Sharpeville, for me, was not a human rights transgression.
Why?
Because if you are 200 police... And coming down the road are 9,000 youth with traditional weapons and guns going off. Somebody is going to get hurt. I feel the same about Marikana, unfortunately. If it's that unstable. But when four bullies, white bullies, grab one guy and beat him to death in a prison cell and his hands are tied, that is a human rights transgression. I detest that. And if it was all my people who did it, I detest that. I detest what happened in the court case today where two white guys... assaulted a guy or put a guy in a coffin. What kind of, why would you want to piss on your own veranda this way?
Yeah,
so no, I'm not blind. I'm not
savagery. Yeah.
I'm not crazy blind and completely partial to what's going on here. But we are not going to have these discussions, and we're certainly not going to solve the things if we don't sit together and have consensual definitions for what exactly do you mean when you see apartheid? Because if you ask me, I see a completely different thing. Very soon, what I'm saying right now will be criminalized. They can lock me up for what I'm saying.
What was good? What was good? I mean, so we've discussed something.
Where do you want to begin? Let's start with life expectancy. Life expectancy shooting through the roof or at least reaching international levels only during apartheid, only during white rule.
I don't have those figures, but are those, is that for the entire population?
Well, how would we know?
Population,
why would apartheid want to count other people's mortality rates and black-on-black murders out there if they didn't see other people as citizens?
It was for the white population.
For the white population.
So blacks weren't citizens of the country?
No, they weren't. They were subjects. That's why you had to have a passport.
So is that what you meant by that tweet that got into trouble a few years ago when you said blacks started apartheid first, or they wanted it first, or something like to that effect?
No, mine was more psychological. It was also an observation of a very distant past.
Yeah.
It was a European civilization clashing with an African civilization. And if you were the stronger one, which they were, the West, and you could conquer it, which in an age of conquest you should, and you liked it, you would embrace it. If you didn't like it, you would build a wall.
Yeah.
So whose fault is it? Whose fault is it if two guys walk up to each other and you like me and I don't like you? Whose fault is it? Why is it only one person's fault? Why is it only one person's fault?
Yeah.
Let's say I perceive what you do there is picking your nose. And, ladies and gentlemen, he's not picking his nose. I perceive what you're doing is picking your nose.
Sure.
And I decide to walk away from you and you can't work it out and you stop following me. You say, come on, what's going on? Come on, what's going on? Who is really responsible for the dismay? You know. So who really is responsible for the war? I decide that what you are doing here is probably not going to help us. We could use lots of things. We could use numbers and we can exploit you, salaries. We can bring you in for the mines. But apart from that, there's nothing that you can do to make our culture better or our collective habit or the thing we bought from wherever we bought it. Let's say Europe, if you go far back, far enough. And you still have that question today. Yes, you can decolonize the university, but what are you going to replace it? Same thing.
But, okay, so you've got great life expectancy, for example. You've got good universities. You've got all these things that happen in apartheid for the white population.
The third richest country in the world with the top 10 army in the defense force in the world. That's all pretty good for Africa.
Yeah, okay, so you've got all these things for a minority population.
So did Nazi Germany. National Socialism loves that sort of shit. The army.
Yeah, and they were economically strong as well. But it counted.
But it's
in an age of conquest, that counted.
But it's just the Bible. Well,
sounds ridiculous now.
World War II wasn't the age of conquest.
Say again?
World War II wasn't the age of conquest.
Yeah, right. What was it? Well, you could still invade. You could still invade other countries. We just don't do it anymore.
One man thought it was the age of conquest. Yeah, and you got shut the fuck down.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually.
Well, he had to be conquered, I'm afraid.
Okay. So you've got all these things, these metrics, which you're interpreting as good things, and they are good things.
I'm trying to do them in context, but I am not the greatest guy to get out onto platforms to defend apartheid. I'm just not good at that. I'm the guy who voted yes for the new South Africa. When they said we're going to do it, I stood in front of the queue. I was one of those Afrikaners. My culture hated me for doing that, today I understand them as well because I was 22 years old when I voted yes for the new South Africa. But I thought, it's not bad. We've all got sins. We all hate each other. We've all done something wrong, or we didn't do something. Why don't we just break even and start again?
But I would buy all of these metrics, which show apartheid was so great, if they weren't using these subjects to make them happen. So you can say there was a great life expectancy. Well, yeah, because it was very easy to, for example, run good hospitals with staff who you didn't have to pay very much and all that stuff. So you could have 3-1 compared to an international compatriot who only had 1-1. This is the problem with that. I think that, clear to me. I agree. Apartheid was a good time for a small group of people. And I agree with Ramon actually more so that actually post-apartheid is a better time for most people in South Africa. Even your community, by the way, economically have done better since apartheid.
Yeah.
Except for
the extra 400,000 squatters and the 52 squatter camps all over the country, exclusively white squatter camps. I don't think they will agree with that.
Which is, I would say,
also the 1.5 million immigrants, of which probably, 800,000 maybe were Afrikaners? Yeah, I don't know. It's neither here nor there. But you've got to keep telling them that you have sacrificed self-rule, and you thought you're going to share power, and you got zilch. In fact, you've just lost your last university.
The thing is that all that would be fine if you'd built the wall, okay?
Yeah.
You built the wall, and you said, right, well, here's South Africa, and it's a white country, and you can have whatever lands you've got, those are black countries, and you can stay in your lands and we'll stay in our lands. But that's not how it worked. You know, it worked with, this is our land and you will kind of work for us, and all those metrics that you're interpreting as good things only existed because of almost a slavery type system.
That's exactly what I'm trying to get to, is you will work for us is slavery.
So
you will work for us for nothing, so for no pay is slavery as well.
If the good that comes out of something comes out of pure evil. Can we describe it as good?
Life expectancy increased, but what a shit life to lead, right? Under the political system.
Compared to the whites. And compared to the people in Zimbabwe, maybe, or the Congo.
Zimbabwe was Rhodesia at the time. Yes,
Rhodesia at the time. But it had its own problems at this stage. But no, I'm not buying the big evil thing. I think Hendrik Verwoerd, like Thabo Mbeki said, this is a very, very unique situation for a country. And Hendrik Verwoerd had that very unique problem, is what exactly are you going to do here? We're not going to walk in here and shoot everybody. It's not what he was going to do ever. What we are going to do is we're going to say, listen, we'll give you your traditional lands and countries. It is 95% of that traditional land is in the most fruitful, of fruitful vegetation of the country. You'll have the best part of rainfall. It's traditionally yours. You know it's yours. We will help you. Erect, do your own, make your own country. Be self, practice self-determination, which is something the Afrikaners are asking for today even. Even like you've sketched this grand atmosphere that we're living in, we still want self-determination. We offered that to other people. I'm saying we, like I was there. We offered it to other people and they didn't accept it.
So
around about the same time that they've got all the substance were brought to revolt.
So your basic premise is South Africa was... at the time, solely run for Afrikaans people. I'm just trying to distill.
White people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, white people. So black South Africans, in air quotes, were not real citizens of the country.
Yeah, I think it's described like that.
Okay.
I think they were known as subjects. That's why the passport.
Okay, sure.
Not the passport, the pass.
Yeah, the pass laws, yeah. Yes. But they had land given to them by the state to practice self-determination. So morally, you don't find any issue with that. I'm not talking about
Steve now, Biko.
I'm not talking about all that sort of shit. I'm just talking about at a practical political level.
No, I don't find
any problem with that. But that's assuming black people aren't from South Africa.
But,
right?
But no, nobody is from South Africa.
Which gets us to the land issue. I mean,
you're right.
You've said a couple of times, you know, we gave them, you know, we gave them X number, 90%, 95%, whatever it is. That's the assumption that it's...
Of the traditional land that used to belong to them anyway. If they want it. Today, those lands are still in trust, by the way. They're still in trust.
Yeah, that's a fuck up, and we know that.
Yeah.
It's the assumption that it was the apartheid governments to give. Was it?
No.
It was.
I get it.
It was, because there was an Anglo-Boer war against the English, obviously. And at the end of that, in 1904, I think, they got together, the peace treaty of Vereeniging. Guess who wasn't even invited to the peace treaty of Vereeniging? Not because they weren't there, not because they were outshining everybody in numbers. They weren't there because they were politically, economically, and militarily insignificant. The black people weren't there. The black folk weren't there. Now they claim it as, they call it the South African War, and they call it the Great War, but it wasn't. It was the Anglo-Boer War. It was the Queen, and it was Paul Kruger, and they declared war against each other. Those are the two nations, the races, if you want, in those days. They declared war against each other. And when there was a victory, that's it. You took the country. If you didn't like that, why didn't you do what the English did, or what the Boers did? It's the age of conquest. You go out there and attack them. But they couldn't. They weren't strong enough. Doesn't say they didn't conquer some people and weren't victorious in certain battles. We know they were. And they were very brave fighters, but they just didn't have the technology.
Right. So it was the age of conquest. The Afrikaners won, or the Boers won at the time.
No, they didn't. They lost.
Well, after the treaty,
there was a kind of a union.
We became a union.
And it was the whites who kind of had their own political party, and they moved on from there.
Controlled everything.
Yeah. You could revolt right there and say, come on, you can't take KwaZulu-Natal, it's ours.
And you saying they didn't, therefore what?
Therefore, that's the question. Why didn't they?
Oh, I have no idea.
I don't know.
But not revolting doesn't mean, you get to kind of rule over me and tell me where I can sort of drive my car.
Yeah, silence, not consent.
Later on, when those things became important for the First Nations of this continent, it was wrong. But back then, it didn't. They were gravitating towards these industrialized nations. That's what they did. You could stay out there, but they didn't. I mean, they wanted to...
But there was... I mean, Steve, there was huge dispossession of black people in the country. And don't get me wrong, I'm not one of these people who's like, you know, give back the land. I really don't buy into this whole argument. I think there are... You know, there are some decent... claims, but I think they're in the minority, and I think, frankly, you know, the things that Julius Malema has said recently and that kind of stuff, it's all crap. But
oh, hate speech.
The black people were dispossessed.
Then why do you think Julius Malema is speaking crap? Well, you either believe it or you don't. No, if you don't, you're gonna have to defend it.
Because I think it's not a Well, it's not a black or white thing, excuse the pun. I think that there was a period where, you know, white people had good access to housing, good access to water, electricity, healthcare.
A period. There were eons. There were millennia of it. That's why I'm saying black people are blaming the wrong people. They should be blaming their own ancestors. The own ancestors, to use the awful word, were paralyzed in the face of the rest of the planet. So by the time the rest of the planet reached this continent, I'm so sorry. There was no other way. You came from the mountains and you gravitated towards a city and you urbanized and you went to work there because it looked better. Sometimes, even if you worked for free, it was still a better option.
Sure,
than
but
where
then
you came
why?
From.
But then why make a guy? He comes to the city. Why can't he sit on the same bench as a white guy?
Yeah. Clean apartheid. Yeah, no, I must say, the most ridiculous part of apartheid is clean apartheid, where I can't swim in the same. I don't get that at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, if the black guy buys into your thing,
great,
he comes to your city and he says, "I want to be part of your system. I want to be part of your system," and all your system does is you can be part of the system, but only to the like level 2 out of 10. You'll never get above that.
So why don't we all go to France and see if we can throw our weight around there as well? They won't. You'll be a second class citizen. You'll be a subject.
But
for
that'll
a very
be
long
just,
time before they accept you.
Just as wrong. No?
No, it's not exactly how it's run today. That's the way it's run today.
But you're giving a lot of authority to the state. You're giving a hell of a lot of authority to the state, Steve.
I am giving authority to... Yeah, but are we speaking of history? Are we speaking in context?
Sure. Don't forget that.
We're trying to verbalize what we think other people thought 50, 60 to 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're right. They had a lot of power.
But doesn't make it... So morality doesn't come into the equation for you?
No.
None whatsoever.
So, no.
So it's history.
Unless, like we've mentioned, the human rights transgression, like that.
I believe that
in time, we will be confronted with the same problems as someone like Verwoerd, and we will be forced to take the same measures, consider the same measures. And I'm afraid it's going to happen to other countries before us, because it's already out there. People are already going, oh yeah, all right, they're already here. They've been here for quite a while. What are we going to do now? They're going to be confronted with the same thing. Isn't it amazing that they have to do the same divisive measures in other countries right now?
Well, only if you believe in progress, which I don't. The human animal remains the same, right?
That's interesting.
Culture always trumps everything else.
It is a bit circular.
I believe in progress.
Yeah, he believes in progress. Yes, great. Medicine's better, but we're still animals at the end of it. Animals, primates. You know, we still believe.
I'm going to doubt that for the first time in my life. At this old age, I'm not so sure.
As long as you don't say some people are primates and some aren't, because that
is not progress.
No, that's fucking racist.
Yeah, no, but I've never cared to call other people or other groups.
All right.
I don't care for that debate. I don't like to do it. You know,
we disagree on the past a little bit. Quite a bit
on everything.
We disagree on the past. Fine.
Yeah. I agreed with your point of view for 20 years. I think I read all that post-apartheid and apartheid literature. I was a student of it, but I'm afraid that was half the story. And now that I've read it all, this side and that side's arguments, I am where you are right now, and what you've said right now, maybe it's a bit vague. Maybe we just need to get in there again.
I want to know how we fix it, because you're here, you're in the country, okay? Mm. You're not going anywhere. You've got kids in the country who assumptively are growing up and have their dreams and their ambitions. Mm. Yes, I know you obviously want... you know, to protect your Afrikaans heritage and culture. But there are pragmatic realities to the countries. I'm not saying that doesn't mean that means you can't protect all of the things you're trying to protect. I'm trying to understand, we've got you trying to protect that. We've got Julius Malema saying things like, we're not going to slaughter white people yet. We've got... other sort of people, including our presidents, making comments about land and making things about, you know, from Van Riebeeck onwards and people being dispossessed in that sense and which that I don't buy into. The thing is, we have to move forward. Okay, so what's your plan on how we move forward?
Oh please, I'm 50 years and older. And please allow me my cynicism, but we can't fix this. That's how I feel this week, and hopefully a month from now you'll phone me and I'll be Mr. Optimistic, but we can't fix it. When my speech was banned from the press club, I knew we won't be able to fix this, because we can't speak. And if people like me's lexicon is criminalized, and I can't say that, and I can't... Liberals come with me with a long list of things I'm not allowed to say. Hey, I've got to tell you this. Please tell me that I'm going out of my mind. Is it possible that for the first time left and right switched places in America? Because the group that is always the daring, pioneering one, growing out there, going for progress, should be the ones voting not for keeping a third term the same, keeping everything the same, keeping Hillary, keeping... They did that.
Well, I think the left and right...
Tradition.
They've horseshoed. So what they've done...
I think so.
...is that the far left and the far right are basically touching each other.
I think that thing. Because me, who's seen as the Republican or the conservative, we've got a beautiful word in Afrikaans called die behoudendes. I can't translate it, but you know what it means. So I am the one who's confronted by the liberals with a long list of things that I'm not allowed to say in order for me to get my point across.
Yeah.
How the hell is that possible?
Well, they're wrong, Steve.
They are wrong.
But that's why things like this can exist. I think you're thinking it's the state doing it, where it's actually just the culture.
You are wrong. You can record this and put it out on Twitter, and I will go to prison, not you, maybe you as well, for the things that you've said. Yeah, you can't ignore. This is not an island. The state is out there listening to us right now.
We haven't said one thing that is hateful.
Or I found one thing right with apartheid. Someone will crucify me for that. I found a lot of things wrong with apartheid as well, but it doesn't count.
Some things were right with apartheid. They made like they made great monuments.
But don't you think we've sat here for over an hour and we've had a conversation in which we've disagreed, right?
Yeah.
And we've got fundamentally different views on certain things.
Yeah.
And nothing bad has happened.
No.
I think it's called just being normal, John.
Absolutely.
Why are you so surprised when this happens? What are you expecting, Steve, to shoot us?
No, please. No, I'm making the point that you're saying it's apocalyptic, that the press club didn't allow you to speak. And I do think it's a problem, don't get me wrong. But I'm also saying that there are platforms where things are happening. There is the progress that you want to see happening.
Well, I don't know. Maybe moving back to the conclaves, maybe the nationalisms will be good again. Everybody will take up their little space. It may be a virtual space in the future. And we will learn again respect for the other person's stance, maybe. That respect, I don't refer to, you know, enticing violence. It's got nothing to do with hate speech, I suppose. So I suppose three steps back and then starting again. I really hoped for a break-even point in 1994. I suppose that was my idealist student vibe at that stage. I've written that on my stomach since. I'm extremely pessimistic at this stage, so please don't ask me nice things about the future. Let's see if we survive the credit crunch and let's see or the credit rating, and let's see if my campaign, which is the Farmer, is better this year than last year.
Yeah, I think you mistake a poor government with its people who voted it in, and I do see correlation, right? But
that's a great generalization.
Absolutely.
I blame blacks for being the majority of people who are keeping in power that government you just mentioned.
Right.
That's a generalization.
But, okay, if you make that blame, do you give that credit when something right happens because of that majority? So,
well, if there are more right things happen than wrong things,
well, in 2019,
I'll gladly credit the...
If power reverses in 2019, you know, you got to credit that same group.
I got to credit the majority group. I will.
Yeah, sure.
Well, not just for voting it, for if that administration succeeds, I will credit them. But no compliments from my side until something happens.
I mean, we don't have the white people to thank for the DA running Johannesburg and Pretoria now.
Yeah.
That's entirely up to, well, certainly there are white people involved in that process, yeah, but that's up to a majority black vote.
Yeah, it will be.
I mean,
I will credit them.
Don't you think we're becoming a bit more democratic? Like people actually have to think about who they're going to vote for now?
I'm a bit nervous about freedom of expression, press freedom. I'm a bit worried. We're saying all these things and we're trying to be optimistic, but we know what's happening on the left-hand side here. They'll do anything to stop any of this conversation.
Yeah, but they can't, so fuck them. I mean, personally, the hate speech bill should come in just for 4 months to jail comedians.
It's going to happen.
And then
we're going to run out of comedians, have no reason to laugh anymore, and then we're going to just let them go.
No, but the world will be free. The world will
they
be
don't
funnier.
Make us laugh in the first place.
The world will be funnier if they go to prison. That's my South African comedians.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that one.
You see.
The majority of them.
Please
tell me that
does have a
Chester
bias.
Missing is, yeah, Chester Missing is going to go as well. Oh, that'll be so great. Although he wasn't funny in jail or out of jail.
Comedians. Not sociopaths.
Not commentators.
Yes.
All right, yeah, great. We agree on that. We agree on that one. Fantastic.
I don't know, Steve. I don't know. Like, I've.
So are you telling me you're optimistic and you see progress?
I am a nihilist. I don't think there's purpose in life.
You are
a nihilist.
Yes.
You know that
a libertarian is basically organized anarchy, isn't it?
I'm an anarchist.
I know that.
Anarchist, nihilist. I don't think there's any purpose in life whatsoever. I do think, I don't trust people in general. I think most people are dumb and stupid. And that's cool. I share the world with them. We get along. I'm not deeply patronizing in any way sometimes.
That was.
But the more I speak to people, the less patronizing I become to people, the less stupid I think people are. I think people do have a lot of consideration for what they think and what they do. And we need to acknowledge that, for example, ANC voters, some people still believe, you know, in what the ANC stood for. They still think they can change. There's many reasons why someone would vote the ANC. Hmm. They're not voting the ANC because Zuma can plunder.
Hmm.
Right? So to blame everyone for that, I sort of see your point, but it's generalizing. And you said you generalize.
Not
cool.
To plunder directly. to be mitigating towards plunder, to how softly a wall jumper can land on my lawn. Somebody writes the policy to make that landing softly. That I can't shoot him because I have to talk to him first and see what his intentions are. He doesn't come with a placard, by the way. He just runs into your bedroom and you've got to go, that guy was right. Roman was right. This guy is actually a good guy.
Ooh, that's a huge generalization of what I just said.
Oh, I love generalization.
I think that's a straw man of note.
Listen, it's good. It's good that you are like that. And we know that you appreciate the liberal space that you occupy. Do you as liberally hand out the rights to the other people that you don't like to practice their little thing? Mine may be the opposite of yours. I don't suppose you are a nationalist, because I'm a nationalist, but I'm a Fawkes nationalist.
I'm an anarchist, mate.
Anarchist.
So, I don't believe in anything.
But we should both give each other the space then to do that thing.
Steve, I fully accept you to believe whatever you want to believe in any way whatsoever you want. I support Julius's right to say what he says. I support your right to say what you say.
Even if it's contrary to the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Because he can say anything he wants except for two things according to the Constitution. Yeah. Enticement to...
Yes, enticement to violence.
Violence?
But it has to be
imminent.
Imminent. So it's not just... So what he said recently... I don't like. I have a problem with it, but I actually defend his right to say it because.
But you don't think it is imminent in the most murderous country in the world?
No.
Or the eighth most murderous country and the most rape, the rape capital of the world. It's okay.
Because
you don't see a connection between the two at all. You're right. I can't in a court blame him for a rape that happens in Redersburg when he's speaking at Bloemfontein, but those are our leaders and they're allowed to get away with it.
But only because the media is so shit. I mean, come on.
Media is terrible. They haven't said a word about that.
Exactly. If you said those things,
slaughtering us just yet,
you would be in prison.
Yeah.
Right? Or a slap with a huge fine. And we know that. And the media's shit and the government's policy and the way it enforces its policy.
I'm going to come visit you guys more often.
Awful.
I love this space.
But it's not because the government is intentionally. They're just fucking awful in every single way. And I think you ascribe so much.
Hypocritical.
And I think you ascribe like so much vindictiveness to a state that really doesn't care about you or me or what or anyone else.
Now, I know you're an anarchist, but if we allow that much anarchy with a government, that's much uselessness when it actually starts breaking
chaos, sir.
All right, if you want. They should be punished.
They should be punished, but who's going to fucking punish them?
If you are reckless and you decide not to defend the 158 out of 100,000 Boer murders, you are the government, you are the ruling party. You have neglected, and that is an act of genocide, because now we are losing 158 out of 100,000 farmers per year. That is mad. That's crazy. When I do these speeches in the UN, and when I read this to people, they just go, come on, that can't be.
I'm not factually, I think farmers do, you know, die at a far higher rate than even policemen in this country, as far as I know. I'm just worried about the use of genocide. I understand why you use it.
100 times out of 100,000 more than policemen.
Right, and I understand why you use the term genocide, but I do think it weakens your argument a lot in this case.
I agree.
And I do think that...
Because you think we are not capable of killing... Are you optimistic about that? Because you think of progress, you think we are actually progressing.
No.
You think we're not capable of murdering at 158 out of 100,000.
No, I think
I wonder if the Hutus and Tutsis were murdered at that rate. I wonder if the Jews were murdered at that rate. It's crazy. But because we're a very small minority and nobody feels it, apparently, it's not cool to call it genocide. What should I call it?
Mass
murder.
Yeah, you can. It doesn't matter what term you use. Okay,
it does matter what term you use.
Because I just said genocide is the wrong term to use it. But I don't. Going back to the point we made much earlier in this podcast, I don't think there's a coordinated act. And if there is an omission by the state, it's not an omission because they hate you. It's an omission because they shit at what they do.
But I've already proven all these things you've said now wrong.
Because of BE legislation.
We've told you what the president says from the podium about certain groups.
Yes,
and
before,
other leaders, what they get away with, the things they say.
Before he was president, he loved Afrikaners. He went to go have a bribe with you, all people.
I bribed with him twice.
Well, there you go. Is he hateful?
Yeah, but I was very hopeful at that stage.
In person?
I could write that bribe. I'm sure you made me pay for that damn bribe.
I think you're ascribing a lot of malice and vindictiveness to people who don't care at all.
That is true as well. No, I accept that. I accept that. They don't care at all. That's why I go outside the borders of this country.
They're in it for themselves.
Yeah. That's why Genocide Watch came to this country to check for themselves. And they found the things that I found. I also use objective opinions out there. And that's why...
Genocide Watch is not objective.
Why not?
In the same way that the UN is an objective.
Because that is the equilibrium. We have someone like that compared to a government that doesn't care shit.
Sure, but the overreaction, I think, deflates your argument. But that's we've done
only if you're not a farmer.
I grew up on a farm, sir. Actually, walkable.
Farmers won't admit to having people like you in their kraal.
Quiz class was my.
So why don't you stand up and
Quiz Clausen, he played for the Transvaal back in the day.
All right.
In the 70s. And we left because we got attacked.
Enough nostalgia.
You did?
Three times.
Is that so?
Yeah. But we found them and they were just youths.
Yeah. Well, you know, I suppose you're right. You can go sit next to a woman who was raped and say, you weren't raped that much. You were only raped a little. Maybe there are degrees of rape.
That is not my argument.
That's why I'm going to say. What's happening, I've now given you my case. I've said that we are giving you the figures. I've given you the proof of that definition for the cultural marginalization of taking away the language, the universities, of policy based on skin color. I give you all that, which completes the definition of genocide. You still want me to use the word because you think it deflates my argument. That's like saying to girls that I raped, you weren't raped that much, were you? You were raped a little.
But I think you're giving a lot of power to people who don't care about us.
I agree. No, I agree to that.
So that's why I think genocide doesn't work.
I am to a degree. I'm idealist, and I still believe that a government can step in because I grew up with a government that steps in. But obviously, this government doesn't do that. I'm not quite sure.
But that government stepped in for you. They didn't step in for others.
I'm used to
that.
You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but we all then came together and voted for a government that will be a
for everyone,
parent to everyone, and now it steps into only some of the children.
That's already where you're wrong. Yeah. A parent, Steve. Come on. A parent.
Well, parental. It's not really a mother and father, but I expect the president to be a father for everybody in the country. And,
why?
And he's
all
not.
I want him to do is do no, I know fuck you hate all go-
I know. As I know much you as ha- no, you and I agree. We don't want governments. But I want a small
you, you can't say you want
possible.
A parent and then
you
say
you
want
you have
a government.
A parent.
When there is a government in a country like this, you thinking that this guy is going to be this guy is going to be parents for all of us, and it did not do. Yes. Academically, when you ask me, do I want big or small governments? I want minute governments. In fact, I'm not sure if we even need a government at all. I am paying for my own security, by the way.
Well, so you're probably paying for a lot of your own things.
I'm probably paying for a lot of other people's security.
Middle class people.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And they ignored the middle class in America, and that was very expensive.
That's why I'm optimistic, somewhat.
All right. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah, and our middle class is growing.
Yeah.
And so that's also why I'm optimistic. I think that's our one opportunity. Mm. If we can grow our middle class, doesn't matter the race, and it's going to be black middle class, not white middle class, but if we can grow our middle class, the economics are what matters. If we can grow our middle class, then the country will succeed.
Yeah, if we can grow a middle class and there are no extra victims, if we can make a dent in 20 years of skin-based policy to unemployment, I'd go, yeah, you're right. But this is not right.
But people who wake up in the morning, go to school/work, do whatever they do, etc., come home, eat dinner, watch their DSTV. Steve, they're not going out to kill people on farms, and they actually couldn't care really much about anyone else.
Yeah, but you haven't listened to what I've said. If we haven't done anything to the unemployment rate, the only thing we have done is taken something from someone and put it somewhere else, give it to someone else.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
there's been a victim, and it's been a government-run policy to make him a victim and make him benefit from
it. By definition, if you grow the economy, you've taken some of those people who are in poverty and you've put them in, they've joined the market, they've come across. So
haven't grown if you have done nothing to the unemployment rate has stayed the same.
No, but you won't grow the middle class without changing the unemployment rate. You won't do that. It's not possible. It's not possible. So I agree with you. If you take from one person to give to another, then you've just made one person poorer and another person, you've given them some sort of wealth. But that's not what I'm talking about. We have grown, the middle class in this country has grown.
Yes,
and if that continues to happen, though the growth comes from somewhere, and it comes from the people who currently have very little or don't have jobs. And the more people we can get into that space, the better we'll be.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, I'll settle for that. That's fair.
Well, unfortunately, we have to go, Steve. We've been here for a long time.
Yeah, that was good fun. I think we can do this all night. I like it.
I think we're just getting started. I mean, we'll have to have you back.
No, please, any time. We'll phone and we'll pop in.
Great.
We'll have a lunch.
Thank you for joining us.
Chris, thank you very much. You sounded better and better as we went along. In fact, you don't sound like you've got a cold at all.
Yes, Jonathan, you sounded a lot better than
Chris.
Me.
Jonathan, sorry.
I can be Chris. I can swing both ways.
You can be Chris. I called him Roman for a long time.
That's fine.
You can call me Susie.
You could have corrected me.
I don't care.
Fine. I love anarchists.
Well, Steve, well, thank you very much for,
thank
for
you.
Coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having the chat.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And I hope I run into you in a pub somewhere and we carry on with the conversation. It was good fun.
Excellent.
Right, Ramon, it's up to
that
you.
That was tiring as fuck.
It's you're on our Facebook page.
Our Facebook page is the Daily Renegade Report. Steve, they can find you on Twitter at
Twitter Steve _Hoffmeyer or on Facebook Steve.Hoffmeyer.
Steve.Hoffmeyer. And find us on Twitter, like our show on iTunes, give a review, and we'll see you all next week. Thank you so much. Bye. CliffCentral.com.